Welcome to Parents' Perspective. This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks, bearded with moss and in garments green. Oh, no, moaned Beth. How am I ever going to get through this? You would think by 10th grade they'd assign something more modern than Longfellow. That's for sure, her friend Melanie agreed. Why can't we do something like take a sad song and make it better? Now that really speaks to me. Lots of luck with that, grinned Beth. I don't think they'll assign lyrics by the Beatles anytime soon. So in the meantime, I'll just hate poetry, shot back Melody. They can't make me like it. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about poetry for children and teens? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a lot more familiar with children's relationships to poetry than most of us. Mary Quattlebaum is the author of 15 award-winning children's books, including three books of poems, Family Reunion, Winter Friends, and A Year on My Street, and Underground Train, a poetic picture book about riding Washington's metro trains. Mary loved reading poetry as a child and loves introducing children to its joys, including rhyme, rhythm, onomatopoeia, image, form, and wordplay. She also writes frequently for the Washington Post, reviews children's books for a magazine, Washington Parent, teaches classes for adults interested in writing for children, and presents frequently at schools and reading conferences. Mary is the mother of an 8-and-a-half-year-old daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mary.
Thank you for having me, Sandy and Linda.
What do we mean when we describe a piece of writing as good poetry for kids?
Good poetry for kids could be anything that really connects with kids. There are a lot of kids that love the rhythm and rhyme and the lively humor of Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein. But it's also fun to explore with kids themselves the poems that most connect with them. And, you know, some kids have different reactions to the same poems. For example, there's a wonderful book of poems called Honey, I Love by Eloise Greenfield. And I was doing a poetry workshop in the schools one time. And there was a little girl, or actually a couple of little girls, who loved this poem called Getting Down to the Music. And one little girl said, what I like about it is that I can feel it down in my bones. And she was referring to the rhythm of the poem, and I could see her sort of moving to it. And another little girl said, I like the way the words feel in my mouth, and then they just come out. And she was speaking to the pleasures of sound and wordplay. So the same poem could be enjoyed by different kids for very different reasons. And also, good poetry might just be a poem that kids like because of the subject matter. My daughter loves horses, and at the age of 3, one of her favorite books was this anthology of horse poems that actually had some very complex poems in it, one by Shakespeare. And I think a lot of it went over her head, but because she loved the subject matter, she wanted to hear that book of poems over and over again. And I seem to remember, Sandy, that you have a younger son who was very interested in epic battles and adventure, and he really connected with Beowulf. So it's kind of finding a subject matter that will engage kids around the poem, too.
Somebody very wise said that we're all born with a feel for rhythm because we have that in the womb, the blood vessels and the heart and all that kind of thing. And so when babies are even quite young, they can respond to poems or rhymes or songs or anything that replicates any kind of a rhythm. And so you would think, with that as a background, that poetry would be the most natural literary vehicle for children, more natural than stories or anything.
And it does seem to be that way. I mean, when you look at children, you know, young children responding to poetry, they do, as that little girl said, you know, feel it in their bones. They're moving, you know, they're clapping. They love the word patterns. They love the repetition. And you mentioned that kids are sort of born with that sense of rhythm, and hopefully it'll stay with us.
Why should parents read young children poems as well as stories?
poems are these amazing little word packages. They're kind of composed of rhythm and rhyme, sound, image, and form. And a story is a different kind of language experience. With stories, young kids are learning narrative and sequencing. They're learning, you know, the logic of story, that a story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. With poetry, the music is paramount. The richness of the language and the sound, that's what's important. And, you know, especially if you're sharing nursery rhymes with kids, which kids just love, not many of them make that much sense. I mean, you think about a nursery rhyme like, "Hey, diddle, diddle, the cat and the fiddle," that makes no sense. But kids love the playfulness of the language and the rhythm. And of course, for young kids, they're just learning about language. So it's this marvelous plaything. They invent words. They take new words constantly into their vocabulary. And poetry is a rich resource for that.
It's interesting. Do you think that children hear more perceptively than adults do?
That's an interesting question. You know, again, just sort of intuitively, it seems like kids engage with their whole bodies, like their senses are just wide open. As we get older, we tend to close our senses down. You know, we don't hear, we don't smell, it'd be too distracting. But of course, for young kids so engaged with the world, their senses are wide open. Because they're not really reading, you know, they're taking in a lot orally. They're taking in a lot through the ear. So they probably are just hearing better than we do.
I remember one of my guys when he was very little. I can't remember the context, but I remember he thought the funniest word he ever heard was elbow.
I would laugh like at that, that word.
And I'm thinking they have to have a whole panoply of sound that they're tuned into.
Yes.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on poetry for children.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with author and poet Mary Quattlebaum about poetry for children.
Would you say children absorb different benefits from poetry at different ages?
I would say yes, again, just based on work that I've done with kids sort of across the age spectrum, seeing what engages them about a certain poem when they are a certain age. With young children, they seem to respond most readily to word patterns and repetition, to rhyme, to rhythm. And a lot has been written, and there's more research out there about what makes for a rich pre-literacy environment. You know, of course, not teaching young children to read, but kind of creating the kind of environment in the home and in the preschool to kind of predispose kids when they're developmentally ready to not just, you know, be open to reading, but to really enjoy reading. And of course, a lot of what's been found is that, you know, you read aloud to children every day, sharing with them all kinds of books, they will tend to be more engaged with reading when they get older. Well, poetry is a big part of that, too, because the young child, you know, is engaging with rhyme, with rhythm. You share a poem with a kid, and they can actually interact with it. So it sets up an interactive reading experience even before the child is ready to read. So, for example, a parent reading a poem to a child might encourage the child to chime in with the rhyme or to chime in with the refrain or the noise that the animal makes if it's an animal sound. And in that way, the reading of the poem becomes this very rich interactive experience.
They can sort of own part of what's being done.
Yes, yes. And they can feel like they're reading. You know, they're participating. They're just not sitting there passively listening, but they're contributing as well.
Which is why I guess repetition is so comforting for children, because they know what's coming, then they can sort of appreciate what's happening.
Right, right.
What's the difference between a child's reading a poem himself, assuming that he can read at that point, and an adult's reading it to him?
Reading a poem to oneself is a very personal experience. You know, it gives you a chance to spend time quietly with the poem, to read it over and over again, to explore the poem's meaning, to sort of react to the poem subjectively. You know, what does this poem mean to me? Reading a poem out loud always has an element of performance to it, which of course is so much fun to kids of all ages. So a parent might read a poem aloud to a child, and you know, that's a fun thing to hear the parent's voice and to see the parent acting out the poem. But as kids get a little older, they like to perform too. And that might be a fun thing to do, you know, for National Poetry Month, is to have families set aside some time where everybody in the family gets to share a poem. Another thing to do that's also a lot of fun is to work with some books of poems. One of them is called Joyful Noise. It's by Paul Fleischman. And it's a book of poems for two voices, so that one person can say, it's a book of poems about bugs, can say a line from one bug's voice and somebody else says a line from the other bug's voice. Well, I've done this with kids in the schools. They love it because they do love to perform. And there is nothing more fun than getting up there with a buddy or an older sister at home or whatever and just performing the poem, hearing your own voice saying it.
I'm getting to play the part of a different bug. I'm already intrigued. Mary, how can we or how should we help to refine or develop children's tastes without pushing a certain style that tends to appeal to us?
Of course, with young children, when you're reading aloud, a big part of that would be, you know, sharing all kinds of poems with them and letting them talk about or choose the poems that they like the best. When we were young, my father, before bedtime, had this little ritual, and each of us got to choose a nursery rhyme. And, you know, he would recite it to us, and we would recite part of it back. And funnily enough, each one of us, and I have seven kids in the family, would choose the same nursery rhyme over and over again, often for the same reason. I like Hickory Dickory Dock because I like the k sound. And my sister liked Little Bo Peep because she liked the peep sound. So, you know, again, not just sharing all kinds of poetry, but sharing the poetry and then letting the kids sort of choose to hear again and again the poems they like best. And as kids get older, they, you know, do become curious themselves about different kinds of poems. So it can be wonderful just to have available to them a variety of anthologies. And one book that I have, it was given to me as a present at Christmas when I was a child, was The Golden Treasury of Poetry. It's a nice, thick book full of poems, not necessarily written for children, but poems written for adults that were appropriate for kids. And it was a lot of fun to read those poems as a child and then come across those poets as I got older. It felt like, you know, seeing an old friend. And there's some wonderful anthologies out there now. Let's see, one is a book of animal poems called The Beauty of the Beast, edited by Jack Paletsky, who also happens to be the first children's poet laureate of the nation. Isn't that a dignified title?
Is that a new position?
It is. He's the very first. And I think that the position was created just to draw attention to how important poetry is for kids. So to honor that by honoring somebody who is very esteemed in the field. In another anthology, this is a wonderful one, called A Family of Poems, and it's edited by Carolyn Kennedy. And she chose poems that she had grown up with, again, many poems by poets for adults that were appropriate for kids, and she's shared them in this beautiful book.
Speaking of poetry for adults that's appropriate for kids, what about poems from other ethnicities. I'm thinking of haikus, for example, mm-hmm. and things from other countries, things from other groups of people. What about that for children?
Yeah. A poem or any piece of writing from another country or another culture is a wonderful window into that culture. You know, to just sort of learn more, not just about what's written about, but how the poem looks on the page. For example, it's a lot of fun to share with children Native American chants that have been around for a long period of time. And so they get a sense not just of what was important, for example, to Native Americans, but also the idea of a chant as a kind of a prayer. And again, the repeating over and over again, that's engaging to kids.
I'm thinking of different senses to be incorporated in teaching poetry or experiencing poetry. And there's so much about Native American culture that seems to me to be visual, mm-hmm. besides being auditory. And I was thinking, do you ever read something to a child and say, close your eyes and tell me what you see, what colors come
mm-hmm,
to mind?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's an important thing to do with kids.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on poetry for children.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with author Mary Quattlebaum about poetry for children.
Another thing that I like to do doing workshops with children is to give them a chance to have, they call it creative visualization. But as you said, Sandy, to close your eyes and just relax yourself before trying to write, you know, to let the images or the sounds or the memories just come to you. Because kids, I'm sure you've experienced this, they're so active. You know, it's hard for them to settle into the quiet place that creating a poem almost requires. But that seems to help them to create a bridge for themselves from this very active energy into a more contemplative kind of a space.
What's the connection for children and teens between reading poetry and writing poetry?
Reading poetry, as we've been talking about, is such an engaging thing to do because of all the things you get to think about and explore through language, you know, rhythm, rhyme, form, image. And a poem is also short, and it's about feeling or it evokes a feeling. So that just by its very nature, a poem encourages you to read it over and over again. And I've found that for reluctant readers, they will often turn to poetry or they'll connect with poetry because it is short. It is about feelings that they can kind of relate to. And there's a lot of white space around it, so it doesn't look so intimidating. And so then from reading a poem, it can be very empowering to think about writing your own poetry. And again, for reluctant writers, that tends to be a form of writing that they will engage in readily. There are some wonderful books out there. I call them bridge books, but they're books that sort of help kids to make that transition from reading poetry to thinking about writing it themselves. And one book I already mentioned is Eloise Greenfield's Honey, I Love. It's a book of free verse poems. You know, they're not worried about rhyme. It's told from the point of view of a young girl experiencing and writing about just the ordinary joys and situations in her life. So I found kids, you know, reading this book and thinking, my life is like that. My sister's like that. You know, I can jump rope like that. So they read the poems, they connect with them, and then they think, I can write a poem like that. So I think this is really a wonderful, very empowering book, and it's one I often enjoy sharing with children.
How can parents foster this kind of empowerment?
One thing to do, of course, is show yourself writing and enjoying writing and poetry. And again, you know, not so much to make it an isolated thing, but to make it a shared family experience. And sometimes that happens just very spontaneously. You can do something planned, like sharing poems for National Poetry Month. But this is a goofy little game that my husband, my daughter, and I kind of play at home. And again, it's not anything we plan, but a person will say a line, and then another person will say a line, and the poem has to rhyme. So you can just kind of riff off of that. And, you know, there's no winner or there's no loser, but you try really hard to keep the poem going. And often it becomes goofier and goofier. And again, it's not great literature, but it's fun, and it's a shared kind of family activity. It's also fun, I think, as families writing together to do writings, you know, whether they're journal entries or poems, perhaps about the same thing. And everybody has a different perception. You know, you go to a family reunion, for example, what did each person enjoy or perhaps not about that experience? And you find out different things. Vacations is another sort of thing that families can write about.
A wonderful excuse might be to use that to communicate with grandparents long distance or that kind of thing. Then you're doing it for at least an ostensible purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Sometimes children have low auditory discrimination. How can we get those children to enjoy poetry?
You know, for those kids, of course, what's hard for them is they can't discriminate between sounds, so they sort of miss out on the rich music that is poetry. But they can appreciate the poem on the page. It's, as I said before, such an amazing little word package that they can appreciate the form of the poem, you know, the shape of the poem on the page, descriptive words, the image that the poem is exploring, the feeling that the poem is exploring. So all of those are part of the poetic experience as well.
What about onomatopoeia for those kids where you hear bang or crash or those kinds of things in a poem?
Oh, yes. And also, you know, poetry, because of its emphasis on rhyme, because of its emphasis on sound, may help kids to sort of better distinguish those sounds.
Mary, it's a pleasure for us to have you with us, of course, and we can't let you go today without asking you to read one of your poems aloud for us.
Well, thank you. I would be delighted. This is a poem from a book called A Year on My Street. It's called Taking My Double Dutch Turn. And I tell kids when I share the poem with them that I was thinking of two things when I wrote this poem. Double dutching, I'm sure many of you know, is a form of jump roping where you're jump roping with two ropes, so you're going twice as fast as you would when you're just jumping with one rope. So I wanted the poem to have a very fast rhythm so that the person reading it would be out of breath just like the person jumping rope. And I also wanted a poem that had a lot of rhyme because I like rhyme and kids seem to like rhyme. So you can listen for the fast rhythm and you can listen for the rhyme here. It's called Taking My Double Dutch Turn. Double Dutch, swing the ropes, start them slow, let them flow. One in the air, one on the ground, double Dutch, round and round. Slap, slap, that's the sound of one rope up and one rope down. Feet gotta skip, feet gotta fly, double Dutch, low and high. Hard street, blue sky, double Dutch, whirling by. Rope slaps, feet thump, double Dutch, jump, jump, jump.
Yeah, I'm out of breath.
Thank you.
Thank
was
you
lovely.
So much.
Oh, thank you.
Makes us want to go out and buy a jump rope.
We need
to watch someone else do it.
Yes, and watch it. I've tried it. It's really hard
I've never
to
tried
do.
That.
That's why young people do this.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time together, but before we go, what resources, besides the ones that you've given so helpfully, would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these poems and issues further?
In addition to the anthologies in the books that I mentioned, there's a website. It's www.poets.org. It's the Academy of American Poets website, and they are a wonderful resource. They are the folks that are in charge of National Poetry Month. They also have a part of their website that's devoted to the sharing and discussion of, you know, specific poems, mostly with teenagers, but it's a good resource. My website, www.marycquattlebaum.com, has a one-page listing of some other resources, especially for kids interested in writing poetry and families interested in writing together. So that list is actually on my website.
Maybe we should spell Quattlebaum.
Okay.
www.marycquattlebaum.com.
Sure. It's Mary, M-A-R-Y, Quattlebaum, Quattlebaum.com. And another wonderful book by a Washington author is Paint Me a Poem, Poems Inspired by Masterpieces of Art. And it's by Justine Rowden. And a lot of the poems in this book were inspired by wonderful paintings that are found at the National Gallery of Art.
Well, we have had a wonderful time talking about poetry and reading poetry and listening to poetry. So, Mary Quattlebaum, you have just been a delightful guest, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk about poetry, but especially with you.
Oh, thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Mary Quattlebaum's book, Winter Friends. Just call 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 334 and tell us, if you can, what station you are tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Colin Fotia. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.